Hello and welcome to this Expert HR podcast with me, Laura Merrilees. Today I'm joined by Patrick Brody, Head of Employment at law firm RPC and contributing author to Expert HR, to discuss the tactics of enforcing restrictive covenants. Patrick has extensive experience in this area and can shed light on what can and can't be done, including some alternative protection strategies, essential at a time when tensions can be running very high. And that's right, isn't it, Patrick? You're in a situation where a key team player is leaving to join a rival, and you're trying to make sense of something that can be legally complex and protect your business interests, but good sense has gone out of the window.
That's absolutely right. One of the fundamental problems with disputes over restrictive covenants is they're often highly emotional and also, as a result, highly charged. That's because the dispute, in many ways, is first, it's about a breakdown of relationship where individuals over the years have invested in each other, and the situation feels desperately personal. They're trying to take away something that's held precious by the employer and important to the employer. And that might be anything from an attempt to solicit employees to leave, or even to take advantage of confidential information which they would have acquired during employment. In my mind, restrictive covenant disputes, the real challenge is that they speak to human emotion, they speak to human behaviour. And that by its nature creates an incredibly febrile atmosphere. There's energy, there's an excitement, there's anger, and there's a fear to these situations. And I, as a lawyer, and equally HR team, have to bear in mind when seeking to resolve restrictive covenant disputes this human element.
Let's take a step back then for one moment from that human element and from the emotion of it, and perhaps just remind ourselves of where in the employment relationship you might typically find restrictive covenants and the type of business interests that they're likely to protect.
In my mind, Laura, the first place to review inevitably will be the employment contract. And in terms of the business interests, which restrictive covenants will often seek to protect, you have things like client connections, customer connections. A proper business interest will be stability of the workforce. In other words, a restrictive covenant which seeks to prohibit the solicitation of employees will, in its sense, speak to that stability. Then there'll be an interest in confidential information of company or a group company. Typically, restrictive covenants will look to protect those business interests broadly in one of three ways. You'll have a restriction which will prohibit the solicitation of senior employees or employees who hold confidential information. Another restriction may well be looking to prohibit the solicitation of customers, clients. And again, that non-solicitation provision will operate by linking the non-solicitation with those customers with whom the departing employee had business dealings during their employment. And finally, and often this is the hardest restriction to enforce, will be a non-compete provision, where that non-compete prohibits the employee from working in competition with the company. It's worth bearing in mind, though, that when I say the company, the prohibition of non-competition has to relate to the activities or the business in which the employee was engaged before they left.
Okay, so imagine as an employer you have a restrictive covenant in place, you know, potentially one of the three that you've mentioned there. How do you read the words of a covenant to understand whether they are effective or not?
Okay, this is a really challenging bit, and it's why in many ways I exist as a lawyer. The courts themselves will broadly take a three-stage approach when deciding whether a restriction could be enforceable. So the starting point, the first stage, is for the court to ask itself, what does a covenant mean when read properly? And it does that by giving the word ordinary meaning in English language. So it's just a straight read through. But they will importantly adopt a particular principle as well, which is referred to as saving the document principle. And what that means is that if words or phrases within a restricted covenant can hold one of two meanings, where one meaning validates the restricted covenant or the second meaning invalidates the restricted covenant, the court will adopt the interpretation which validates the restricted covenant, in other words, makes it enforceable. But it's worth bearing in mind that saving the principle doctrine is only applied, and the courts only look at it if there's a genuine ambiguity in the words used. The second stage, which the courts will move to, is they'll ask themselves, is there a legitimate business interest to be protected? And by that, I go back to those categories which we talked about a moment ago: client connections, workforce stability, confidential information. The third stage then is the courts will ask themselves, is this covenant which we have read, is it no wider than is reasonably necessary the protection of that business interest which has been identified? Just by way of example, for example, a non-compete provision, the restricted covenant will exist for a period of time, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. And the court in those circumstances will ask itself, how long does it remain confidential? And for how long does it remain business critical? And with the duration of that restriction equating to the period over which the information remains business critical.
Covenant itself, though, might have been drafted some time before you come to look to enforce it. So, you know, potentially that could have been a number of years ago, I guess, and a job will have moved on in that time. Is its enforceability viewed at the time that the employee signed up and entered into that covenant, or at the time that you try and enforce it?
That's a really good question. In many ways, the answer almost feels counterintuitive, and that's because the courts will look at the circumstances of the parties when the contract was agreed rather than when the employee leaves. And in doing that, the court will look at the role being performed by the employee at the time that they signed up to the contract. And they'll ask themselves whether the restrictive covenants are appropriate to the role being performed by the individual. For example, the courts will ask themselves, in performing that role, did the employee have access to confidential information? Did the employee have influence over the customers and clients? Alternatively, when that role was being undertaken, would the employee have had influence over the senior employees who the company may be requiring the employee not to solicit? Now, as a rule of thumb, the more junior the role of an employee, the less likely the need for a restricted covenant, because that individual is unlikely to have significant influence either over employees or over customers, or even have access to confidential information. But it's worth bearing in mind that if the employee was hired at a relatively junior role, where ordinarily you wouldn't expect restricted covenants to apply, if the employer and the employee had an expectation that the employee would be promoted to the organisation quickly, the courts will be willing to consider that point. Well, that point is about the expectations for the promotion. And again, as is so true with all restricted covenants, what's absolutely critical in enforcement is the ability to put forward evidence which supports the connection between the role performed by the individual and the restrictive covenants which are being sought.
Assuming then that you have a very wide clause in place and you know that it's not going to be enforceable in its entirety, can some phrases of that covenant be severed so that you can at least enforce in part?
You can do. And as I said right at the beginning, the key question for the court is whether the covenant goes no further than is reasonably necessary for the protection of the business interest. If the covenant is too wide, that's unreasonable, the courts will regard it as being void. They'll say it's unenforceable and it will be struck out. It'll be struck out in its entirety. However, against that, it's worth bearing in mind that the courts will strive to uphold restricted covenants. Now, they won't rewrite a restricted covenant, but what they will be prepared to do to make a covenant enforceable is that they may be prepared to blue pencil, in other words, sever particular phrases or words in order to make the covenant enforceable and reasonable. But in doing that, the courts will absolutely look to ensure that in making that severance, they still retain the overall sense of the restricted covenant. And equally, the character and the nature of the covenant remains. If it's a non-solicitation of employees, it remains a covenant which is capable of prohibiting the solicitation of those employees. Now, there's a real debate to be had. And one of the issues which the Supreme Court will be asked to consider is whether the right approach to severance is whether severance should be applied to the whole of the restricted covenant In other words, it can only apply to separate restrictions, severing those separate restrictions. The alternative is whether it's possible to look at a single restriction and simply sever words or phrases from that single restriction in order to make it enforceable.
It'll be fascinating to see what the Supreme Court decides on that. Now, we were discussing earlier that it's time of high tension when restrictive covenants are engaged. And if you're litigating, it's likely to be hugely expensive, isn't it? Does negotiation have a role to play here? And typically, what would a negotiated settlement look like?
I would never underestimate the need for negotiation in terms of restricted covenants, not least because for parties which are entering into that restricted covenant litigation, it's hugely expensive. It will be time consuming. And one of the fundamental challenges which we all appreciate within litigation, this is particularly true for restricted covenant litigation, is the pure uncertainty. And when you weigh up each of those elements, the answer must be to find a position of resolution which balances the interest of the employer to protect its business and the interest of the employee to exercise her or his trade to carry on working. And that's where the role of, again, lawyers will come into it, teams, senior teams, HR managers, which will be looking to see whether there are alternatives to litigation. And they will exist. For example, rather than litigating, you may well be having a conversation with the employee to see the extent to which you can agree that that individual will be out of the market for a period of time. Often that will be on garden leave. That's important because it provides the employer company with an opportunity to shore up its clients, shore up its customers, and also to have conversations with its own employees, where those employees might be slightly wobbly as a result of the departure of the individual. You'd also look at agreeing non-solicitation provisions. In doing that, you'd recognise that often a non-solicitation provision is slightly easier for an employee to agree as opposed to a non-compete. Again, there'll be terms dealing with confidential information. It shouldn't be difficult for an employee to agree with her or his employer that they will not abuse confidential information, or that they'll return company property. They'll return that confidential information that they hold and ensure that they don't retain copies of it. That shouldn't be too difficult to give up. Also, one of the areas which employers will look at carefully and will look to have some comfort around will be the employee's ongoing use of social media, to the extent that that use speaks to them joining a competitor in the future. It's worth bearing in mind also that in terms of the areas for resolution and compromise, all of them should ultimately be acceptable to both an employer and employee. It's difficult, certainly in my experience, it's always been difficult to envisage positions where if we'd tried, we wouldn't have been able to find a position of resolution. I always think that that is available to us.
So just rounding up now, Patrick, I mean, if you want to protect your business interests, what are the key points to have in mind if you're looking at restrictive covenants and alternative protection strategies?
The absolutely key point in terms of drafting restrictive covenants is draft them by reference to what the employee is doing at the point that they sign up to the employment contract. It's by reference to the employee's role at that time. So you're not future-proofing it against what they might do sometime in the future. It's about what they are doing at the point that they sign up to their employment contract. For me, one of the absolute critical principles in terms of drafting restricted covenants is don't overreach drafting. In my mind, less is more. Because if you ask for more in terms of the protections under the restricted covenant, there's a risk that the whole restriction falls away. Draft restricted covenants by reference to each obligation which you want the employee to comply with post-termination. Also, in terms of restrictions which you're seeking, a key area to concentrate on is whether or not the employer organisation genuinely needs a non-compete restricted covenant. It's that covenant and covenants of that nature where the greatest disputes take place. And it may well be that an employer organisation says to itself that they believe they have adequate protection through the non-solicitation of employees, the non-solicitation of customers and clients, when combined, for example, with express obligations of confidentiality, which are imposed on the employee under the employment contract. Always remember to review restricted covenants at the point that an employee is being promoted into a new role. And it's an opportunity to renew, refresh those restricted covenants by reference to the role that that employee will be performing. You asked, Laura, as well about the possibility of other alternatives to restricted covenants. In my mind, probably the most relevant one and the most obvious one is in terms of garden leave and the extent to which, rather than imposing a restriction and keeping an individual out of the market under a restricted covenant, you seek to keep them out of the market by using and enforcing a garden leave provision. In other words, rather than asking the employee to work notice, you say to them, I want you to be at home. And when you're at home, I don't want you to contact employees. I don't want you to contact customers and clients. Because in that way, you are, to a significant extent, achieving what you would otherwise have gained under the restricted covenant, particularly the non-compete restricted covenant, which is to keep the individual out of the market.
Well, thanks very much, Patrick. And it's a really great point about the garden leaves and, you know, effective practical strategies. And it's so useful to have the benefit of your insight.
Thanks, Laura.
And if you want to take a deeper dive into restrictive covenants, you'll find further guidance in the Contracts of Employment chapter of the Employment Law Manual. Well, that brings us to the end of this Expert HR podcast. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to you joining us again next time.